Unit 13. 13.1. Exercise 4. Extract 1.
Kids love it when I say I talk rubbish for a living, but it's the truth. As a recycling officer, I'm pretty obsessed with cutting down on consumption and waste. People come into this field from a mix of backgrounds. Mine is teaching, which is ideal. And most days during term time, I'll have some contact with schools. Kids are very receptive to the Save the Planet message, and they're actually natural collectors of everything from bottle tops to newspapers, which is useful. If it's a keen school, I'll ask questions and they'll bombard me with questions of their own, which is great. But if I ask, what's recycling, and someone answers, riding your bike, I know I've got a long morning ahead of me. Usually, they're completely spellbound. They've a rough idea of what the local dump is, but with a video and descriptions and the occasional trip, I can really spell out what landfill means. The cost of burying rubbish is enormous. Even taking into account the roller coaster changes in price for recycled plastics, glass and paper, it's still worth recycling, and children are receptive to that. What really gets me is the lack of local initiatives. There is often no direct link between policy and action.
Extract 2.
Now, Professor Dean, the greenhouse effect has made finding alternative sources of energy all the more urgent, hasn't it?
Indeed. If not for the greenhouse effect, we may have been able to postpone finding a replacement for fossil fuels for some time. Places like India and China, for example, have huge quantities of cheap coal at their disposal. But with the greenhouse effect, we need to make the transition earlier. But renewables, such as solar and wind power, all tend to be very episodic, and the power density is low. Investment and take-up of renewables has been variable.
And what about biomass energy?
Well, that brings you to the inevitable land use issue. Say that by 2050 you wanted to supply 10 terawatts of power, which equals the current total energy consumption of all humankind, and you wanted to do it with biomass energy, you would need an area equal approximately to 10% of the Earth's land surface area. Eventually you'd have people and you'd have wheat, but nothing else. I'm not sure how popular that policy would make a government.
Extract 3.
With me to talk about environmental issues today is Dr. Jane Dove of the University of Melchester. Welcome, Jane.
Good morning.
Today we're discussing the Gaia hypothesis, a theory about the Earth put forward in 1965 by James Lovelock. Now, Lovelock was a scientist outside the British establishment. He took issue with the accepted view that the Earth was just a passive host to millions of species of plants and animals, and that these living organisms simply adapted to the environment they found themselves in. Jane, nowadays, Lovelock's theory that denuding forests will ravage delicate ecosystems is generally accepted, isn't it?
Indeed. But, you know, even in the 1960s, he was thought of as a tree-hugger. Someone who goes around hugging and worshipping trees. A bit of a weirdo, really. Of course, it didn't help that he called his idea the Gaia hypothesis.
Yes, in fact, this name, after the Greek goddess of the Earth, pushed Lovelock even further away from his peers.
I guess to them it seemed to represent the very opposite of rigid scientific inquiry.
True. More a holistic view of the Earth. That's as a whole, rather than its individual components. He wasn't an amateur, though, and his ideas have since gained acceptance.